we start. Okay, I'll do it. Margaret Banyan. Terry Call.
Here.
Bill Williams.
Here.
Bev Larson.
Here.
Tony Cardinale.
Here.
Al O'Donnell.
Here.
Marion Briggs. Bill Johnson Jr. Rick Angelikis.
Here.
Patty Whitehead.
Here.
Phil Bowler.
Here.
Stephen Hook. Sam Fisher.
Present.
Edward Blott.
Here.
David Urich.
Here.
Ann Pierce.
Here.
Randy Kreis.
Chris is here.
Chris, sorry. Ted Trika.
Here.
Daniel Wagner.
Here.
Tim Sabrowski.
Here.
Bruce Butcher. Robert King.
Here.
Linda Carter. Scott Gilbertson.
Here.
And we have way more than a quorum. Which I couldn't say that for the TAC this morning. Didn't have a quorum.
And they didn't decide anything.
Public comments on the agenda? Anything? Anybody? No? None? Yes? No? Okay. We do have two new members to our committee. Each of you will have 25 minutes to tell us all about yourself. And I'll start with ladies first. Bev Larson, appointed by Commissioner Fenegas.
I'm Bev Larson with Lahaina Realty. I've been here over 39 years, and my business I do, I think, is legal.
Well, Fenegas still a lawyer. All right.
Just like a political debate.
And Joe Estero, Robert King.
Nice to meet you. I've lived in Estero for the last 8 years. Currently serving as president of the Homeowners Association at Belterra. I'm a member of the East Corkscrew Alliance, which is an organization interested in safety issues on Corkscrew Road. And I am the transportation director for the ECCL.
Welcome, both of you. We'll go to first item, new business, agenda item number 2, amendment to the 1415 and 1516 UPWP. Don.
This is to cover amendments to recognize the work for at least the rest of this fiscal year for the support in showing up at the Leadership Academy tasks, essentially attending the webinars and participating in the travel out of state to Indianapolis as part of that. The actual cost is not there. It's actually just covering the staff time that goes along with the webinars, things like that, because they're covering the cost of the plane trip and the food and hotel up there. And then the second part of that is an amendment to take a little bit of money from 3.1 and add it to the freight and goods movement that was down near the bottom of needed some money.
Any questions? Chair, I'll look for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Bill. Second. Second by Tony. Got it? Okay, discussion on the motion? Hearing none, seeing none, press your ready to vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign, motion carries. Agenda item number 3, the deobligation of. Again.
Now, this is also a UPWP amendment. I'll bring up what's on there because I threw it on there quickly. We thought we had more time, but we were asked to, by April 2nd, I think, to tell FDOT when, how much money we want to deobligate out of the our SU-funded project. So the first one with that is the roundabout study. Won't be totally complete, so I've filled in, as you see here, 60,000 will be decreased from there to be available. With our new UPWP, any of our agreements now are going to be under this one agreement that goes by our UPWP, so those have been LAP agreements that have been separately funded, so we have to terminate those agreements. This will terminate that agreement and take the extra money and put it under the new agreement starting July 1st. So for the roundabout, that will be $60,000. And then for the Cape Coral bike ped, which won't be completed the end of July, that is $45,000. And as part of that, the other change in the task that is really the now stuff is the changes to the task 4.4, where I'm lowering by the amount that we're reducing and showing that within the tables that we send to FDOT.
What's that one that's going from 700,000 to 78?
Because when we first started all these, we thought we were going to do it in the previous year. So now that was touched, it kind of rolls over in there. So when I show the changes here, I'm showing what happened since that time.
So we're not losing any money here.
No, it's deobligating the amount that we aren't going to spend this year, so it's available July 1st to use to keep the studies going.
Just moving it out 1 year.
Yeah. It's a little bit different. We've never had to really do this from the, because all of our LAP funding agreements are now coming under the one Unified Planning Work Program agreement. And when we have an updated version that we can bring back to the council and the board, we'll do that. The lawyers are going back and forth right now. Our direction from our statewide MPOAC is not to sign the agreement at the moment because it's not something that they want us to sign yet. But I'm trying to get ready for any of the action when all that happens.
Okay, any other questions, Don? All right, chair, look for a motion to approve.
Approve.
Moved by Phil. He can do it in a second. Okay, Phil, and
Kerry.
Okay. Carrie Call, seconded. Okay, discussion on the motion. Seeing none, hearing none, trustee ready to vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Don, you picked up both members that came in.
Yep.
Please. Okay. That brings us to our agenda item. This is very important. Agenda item number four, the review and approve.
So what I added in there was under the meetings section on page 5 is members of the CAC. Let me see if I pull it up here. Yeah.
Page 5?
Mm-hmm.
Page 4?
Right here. Members of CAC that cannot attend the meeting in person may elect to call into the meeting to participate in discussions, but their participation in the meeting shall not count towards the meeting quorum, and those members calling in will not be permitted to vote on the items. Members who want to call in will need to provide a 24-hour note. We just need to know that we can set it up wherever the heck we're meeting. Here, it's no problem. If it's somewhere else, it might be a little bit more to try to set up the conference call. But the distinction from the attorney side, and we've submitted it over to the attorney. I haven't got anything back at this point, so hopefully there's not any changes, but yeah. Was that you can participate, have discussion and stuff, but not vote.
Okay, and that's the only change that we circulate. Margaret, go ahead.
It may be the same question Terry has, but my question would be, does that count for
It's the same question.
That's what Ty was asking about. I was assuming, it's up to you guys, the way you want to put it.
Well, because the language isn't in there, and I was kind of wondering, does that count if we attended? Like, if I can't be here, but
if you read it literally, it doesn't change it.
Right.
Yeah, the way it is right now, it doesn't. But.
So why would you bother?
Well, you're just giving us permission to call in. And that's all.
Well, I thought it all started because you might want to hear what's going on, not that we were covering it. But
that's true.
I didn't participate in the discussion.
Yeah.
That's true.
So okay, as long as that was the end.
So the question is really when you get to the previous page 3 where it talks about attend mandatory, if you don't attend the meeting in a row or something like that, does this mitigate that?
That's the question
that would throw it on the mercy of the chair, I think. The chair doesn't have mercy all the time.
I don't mind not voting, but I have a problem with me
Yeah, and I would think that that would discourage people from doing it.
I'm sorry, we're having discussion.
I'm agreeing with the ladies, I believe. I think if you've taken the time to be present telephonically, it should count. I agree that probably you shouldn't vote for whatever.
I don't think it should count towards attendance, because your obligation in attendance is that you vote. And if you're already precluded from voting, you're not in full attendance in terms of fulfilling your responsibilities. I think it should be informational only.
I think there's a balance there, because in some ways I would not want a person to attend 12 months of the year by phone, right? So there's a limit to counting it for attendance, but at the same time, I don't think it should always not count for attendance. I mean, I think that if we're going to do something, that should say...
Or
something like that, because I think the goal of the attendance is not just to vote, but the goal of attendance is to be informed and represent the people that we're here to represent. So we can do that over the phone, even if we're not. So it might be something like members may attend, once out of a 12-month calendar year by phone, something like that. I mean, I know it's kind of complicated.
In addition to the other meetings that they miss, that they're allowed to miss. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, that's what she's suggesting.
Is there any, excuse my ignorance of this, is there any issues with sunshine? If you're not at the meeting and calling in, is there any implications?
Well, that's...
Is that as attendance-wise? That would be my concern.
I think that's why he sent it to the attorney. So,
that would be my concern.
The attorney passed this, right? Passed this language?
He's got it. I haven't heard back from him.
What are you worried about on sunshine?
Well, no, as... No, same me as... I'm an attorney, don't hold it against me either. So, but no, just because there's always been this, and I've dealt with a state agent before being there, there's always, sunshine is very obviously heavily regulated, and they always concerned about some kind of undue influence. Even if it's an attendance issue, that would be my concern, even if it's just to count one out of those missing ones, and that would just be my...
But the sunshine problem doesn't work, because everybody's invited to come to the meeting. And if somebody hears it on the end that somebody's speaking on the computer, it doesn't matter.
No, I know, but if there's any kind of hint, which I know is ridiculous.
If you and Margaret were locked up in the same room and only one of you called.
But we don't do that.
Well, of course,
that's the issue with sunshine.
That would be a sunshine violation anyway. That wouldn't be...
No, that would be a total violation. We don't do it.
Right.
But it's the appearance, not that I would ever expect it to happen with anyone in this group, and that's unfortunately, sunshine may look a little overbroad on some of that. That was just my concern. It was just a note.
Dan, go ahead.
Yes, I guess I'm lost to figure out why this will benefit this committee. I just don't see the big benefit to the committee.
Because not all of us are retired, and a lot of us travel for work, and sometimes we might miss a meeting, and not because we want to, but, you know, I've made it a point all year to travel back here for these meetings because you told me I couldn't vote and I couldn't participate, so it's important enough for me to be here, but I'm sure a lot of other people would not do that. They would get off your committee, and you might lose a whole generation of young professionals on your committee, and because you're not willing to move forward. So we're asking you just for a little bit of moving forward.
Let me see if I can craft a solution here. What if we added to the
language? And I'm not young, I'm 51, by the way. I'm just asking you. I'm asking you to move forward. Well, yes, I understand that.
What did you say, Mr. Chairman?
I said what maybe a compromise is if we crafted something in the paragraph that talks about absences and included, maybe two or three excused absences that would be telephonically related. So somebody could maybe once a quarter or, you know, once every half year or something, put it in that little section. Does that sound like a compromise?
Once every half year?
Well, maybe
twice a year.
Twice a year.
Twice a year sounds
that's fine.
To me, at least two meetings a year will not be counted as absences pursuant to section five, whatever it is, 5.3.
That's good.
Okay, if somebody would put that into a motion, we could act appropriately.
Maybe.
I said move.
Moved by David.
Second.
Second by, I'm sorry.
Steve.
Okay. Discussion? Additional?
What is the exact language?
It'll be two excused absences if you attend telephonically a year.
I think we could add it to the bottom of section five, membership three, the last of that, let's say, telephonic membership or attendance pursuant to section 8.4. Will not count as an absence if only occurring twice in 1 year.
So the total a person could miss, it would be 5 out of 12.
Theoretically.
Only if they're unexcused, though. Yeah. Only if they're unexcused. If you really want to push it on someone, and they've had a bunch of unexcused, you can push it. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that on any committee I sit on.
Typically, when people basically, they've gone to two meetings in a year,
right.
And the chair calls them in, do you want to get out? And almost always they say, look, yeah, I obviously can't make it. It was just, we had some issues where people weren't showing up but didn't really want to leave. We just wanted to put something in here that sort of codified it.
Does that clarify? All right. Does that clarify your question? No thanks. Additional discussion?
So how many people have you booted in the last 5 years?
Well, it's hard to say where you actually go to the board and do it. We've done one,
right.
But it hasn't had to go that far with ones that just
exactly.
So I think there's probably around a handful.
So it's not a problem, really.
Well, as you see today, we're having this discussion, and this place is packed.
Most I've ever seen here.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I think that the fact that it's in the bylaws keeps it from being a problem. So it's working both ways. That's why I think that I support the attendance policy. And again, the problem is people not showing up. And if they're showing up by telephone, to me, they're showing at least doing something to show up. So
we did have a problem. Was it 6 or 8 years ago?
Right.
People weren't, and they were arguing about it.
Right.
And that's why we put it in the bylaws.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
And since then, it hasn't been an issue because it's all right there.
And we always are pushing the issue all the time.
No. People who've been sick, yes. People who were sick for a while, and there's a series of meetings, and we called them and said, do you need to make more? And, I mean, it hasn't been a hard sell. Issue.
Most of the time they're thanking you for calling.
Please get your mouth.
So if somebody does make use of this there's a calling number, will all the members be aware of the calling number?
Yeah.
So other people
yes.
are listening to, they can just call.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. We'll have a conference calling number.
Yeah. According to the sunshine, the calling number has to be.
And this is because of our new multimedia room here, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Of course, we don't have the TV screens. Yeah, kind of got spoiled here. All right. Additional discussion.
I have one on page 5 because Ty had brought it up earlier.
Wait a minute. I got a motion on the floor.
Okay. We need to vote.
Yeah.
So let's dispose of that. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. And then Don, you'll make the correction accordingly in the thing. And then you're back to the
top. Number 9, where it says participation by phone or other technology is not available at this time, needs to come out. The last sentence in there.
Got it.
I'll just strike that sentence.
Right.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Ty, second by
Bill.
Discussion, hearing none, seeing none, trustee ready to vote, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign, motion carries. Do we have to have this come back to us before you can?
I will go and talk to the attorney, and then I will tell you whether I need to come back or not.
Okay.
Ahead of time.
If he has no objections, then your intent would be to go take these changes to the FPO for their.
Exactly.
I can't imagine he would, if it doesn't count as a vote.
Yeah.
Just one question about the 24-hour notice to create the call. Was there always going to be a call number available? Because then you need more time for public notice.
Well, I guess that's one of, I mean, I guess the way we were kind of looking at it is, well, it wouldn't be every time, but it can be. So I guess that's the.
So you would just have, whenever you publish the meeting, you would have to publish the calling number. That's all. Okay. It's that easy.
So it would be more than 24. It would just be a standing rule that you would have a call number,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not easy. The discussion of this item was never prior to this about the public calling it.
Right.
I mean, that's another issue we can certainly discuss.
Well, they can do that too. Well, they can come to the meeting.
They can call and listen to me.
Well, they call and listen, but can they participate in the meeting?
Well, I think there's a way to set that up where certain call numbers could just be listed.
No, I know there's a way to set it up, but you could get 50 people who decide to call in and tie up the meeting.
Listen only if you're only calling.
Right.
If I can't vote, you can't talk.
You're right, Patty. This opens the door.
If I can't vote, you can't talk. You can listen.
So, one more problem.
Yeah.
If 15 people call in and they can't vote, then we don't have a quorum.
Well, that's the definite part of having a quorum in the room has to have happened.
Yeah, it's better than these.
Okay, we'll go to agenda item number 5.
All right.
Review and input on the draft of the. Can you get up the.
Yeah, let me pull up. I'll go over. Get this.
Anybody else who missed this?
Harvey needs one.
No traffic, is there?
Did the bottle of car? Because I can't put the flat tire.
Okay, so at the last meeting, I know we talked a little bit about the format changes. We had the next day is when we met in Bartow and talked about some of the details of it. So it's a little better than what we thought might happen. For instance, at the beginning of the year, all or most of the money will be available for the year, where we're usually waiting, get a little portion of the money, and then later on maybe a little more or halfway through. So that kind of alleviates some of the concern, particularly when we're talking about some of the things like the SU-funded projects, that planning projects, and when we could start. So that gets better. But one of the things, I'll go through some of the changes in there. We have different, essentially identifying more specific funding for each of the different areas. Particularly from the direct expense side of it. So like for here, I had $24,000 in advertising and some of the insurance that we pay separated out. It remained to see once it goes through review whether some of it needs to be broken down some more. Because I had in there, for instance, salaries and fringe benefits, which covers FRS and our health benefits. In here, I put task 1.4, more breakdown of the office rent, MPO storage, telephones, conference calling, line, things like that, mailings, postage, broken those all out. And put that within this identified office equipment thing. So at least you see where, more specifically, where some of the money adds up to. This is more of what we probably want to talk about with the administrative side of it. And it's backwards. I put it in the wrong way.
I don't know what happened to that. I had the first year in there. So I'm in there earlier going, I don't have the second year here, because here's the first year. This is more of what, beyond staff, what are we all spending consultant money on? At the top is the staff portion of this thing, but this starting with accounting services, our legal services each year, the MPO audit that's done every year, and the TIP reporter tool, which we started, what, that was the year before last. Those will be ones of each year. And then the other ones, like the regional model alternatives, we just put some money in there for modeling the regional alternatives as we do amendments of the long-range plan, presuming that there are going to be amendments one or two per year. Fort Myers Beach lighting study, which we were going to start this year, but based on when the money started, or when we just got approved actually about a month ago for the rest of the money, that will actually start July 1st, and that's why it's shown in here. Completion of the website upgrade, we started some of that, but that will get completed. Performance measures and targets, since they're all going with the Leadership Academy and we'll start coming back saying, hey, these are some of the performance measures we should do. That's follow-up to try to do, kind of define that better, if there's any data collection that goes along with it, and the analysis that will go along with that. And at some point, our requirements are, what are we doing for targets? But that still hasn't been determined by Federal Highway Board. Public involvement outreach activities, we had some money that we were trying to look at carrying like the bike ped, the action plan, safety action plan further, outreach activities, like taking that next step with the bike ped safety action plan. And then the second column is the SU funded, which we, this was the deobligation, the first two, the Cape Coral, the 45, finishing that in the roundabout, and then now starting the Fort Myers Beach master plan, which we could have started now, but then we turn around and deobligate it, so it didn't make any sense. We'll start that on July 1st. And then the second part, not that I'm trying to go in order here, the second year for the consultant side of it, same thing all the way through the TIP tool, but then a little less money for the model alternatives, finalize performance measures and targets. I added in a conduct a model origin destination study based on the evacuation study with Cape Coral and some of the other things that are going on with the interstate. We've had some conversations with cell phone providers to be able to provide data that we can use for a bunch of different studies. We'll break it out into pieces. We'll have more discussion with that as we get closer to it. And then begin the update of the MPO Bike Ped Master Plan when Cape Coral's done, Fort Myers Beach is done, Bonita is done, update the our start updating our master plan. And then one of the other things I wanted to show in there was with our transit money, 5305, we have some that we're talking about PL when we do some of the planning money that we use, but we also get FTA money. Most of that, we 20% we spend, so 80% LeeTran spends. So I've broken those out to show the difference in that. We use consultant services when we do that. They do mostly from the staff side of it. Kind of keeps it clean when we start talking about the auditing side of it. You already saw that one. And then Tiger stuff, this was after the Tiger project's done, we still have to go out and do performance measures of the PERT when it's completed. So that shows the money to go out and do the data collection. And then in the second year that, I show less because it cuts back a little bit. We don't have to do all the survey data that goes along with it, but still collect the count data. And this actually goes on for up to 5 years after the project's done. It's the gift that keeps giving. The tables in there, it's not. I just threw it up there, and it's hard to read up here, but you have it in there. I think it's after page in your tables here. 75. Yeah, after page 75. Broke out all the different, like, what's the SU-funded ones, what's the Tiger-funded ones, what's the state grants-funded ones. Same thing, I'll have a task for 4.6 is just our design build. It's not the planning. We're going to show it somewhere. We have administration money that's partly funding some of the staff for project management, but then we also show the construction money. I put $3 million after still end of June. I'm not really sure at this point. We'll have a better number when we get closer to the final approval in May. And obviously, for the second year, that goes away because the project's done. One of the other things in there is the planning emphasis areas. And the emphasis areas that we need to focus in on, a lot of this we've had over time from Map 21 and other things that have come up. But multimodal transportation planning, freight planning, transit planning, complete streets, bicycle, pedestrian, and a lot we talk about, like the bike fit safety action plan. And then federal planning area, emphasis areas, MAP 21 implementation, that's still a part of this, like the performance measures is still a requirement that we have moving forward. Regional models of cooperation, we have a lot of that with our agreements with Collier and with Charlotte. And ladders of opportunity, it's trying to get opportunities for lower income to get to work, things like that. And we show that within the group. The other two that have come out is enhanced travel and tourism, and then improve the resiliency of the transportation system and reduce or mitigate stormwater impacts of surface transportation, which we're dealing a lot with on any project that we go out and do right now. No, that's an emphasis area that's coming in there. So I open it up for any comments anybody has. If you have any comments you want to send within the next 2 weeks or so, because I know I'm just providing some of that to you now. We'll do final approval in May.
Mary? On page 22, you have travel and training. I'm assuming that's for staff.
Yes, and board, too.
Without seeing, past history of what this budget item is, I'm very big on education and training, and that seems kind of light.
I have it in more than one area, though.
Okay.
I have travel under, the regional stuff when it comes to,
Okay, so
like
this
our MPOC and stuff. So that's not the total travel and training.
Okay.
And some of this covers, it's not just us. It's also the board side of it.
But from your side, you think it's adequate?
When you add it all up together, but if there's something that came up, like the part with if we had to pay for what was going on for like that other thing, we'd have to address it separately and change something.
Any other?
We try to get stuff.
Right. Sponsored.
One comment on $24,000 in the advertising. Is there some? I'm assuming we're publishing things in the newspaper, and at some point, can we legally get off that?
I would like to cut some of that. I was actually
now,
surprised. Some of these surprised me when I looked closer, because I started looking at the news press bills and adding up and put a, if we had meetings every month, we don't, so it doesn't always work out that way. But if we did that,
I don't see that people go there to learn about the meeting. I mean, you guys have an extensive mailing list,
right? And it wasn't
all communities, and you have the website. It's a question for the lawyers. At what point can you drop? Because I wouldn't advertise in the paper at all.
You have to.
Yeah, and this
well,
isn't.
You advertise somewhere. You could advertise in the.
Depends on the staff.
The lead
so you
shopper.
Have to wherever you do the meeting.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, 20 years from now, you won't have to. But at some point, it'll just, I don't know whether we're there yet, but.
That's not just the meetings either. This is like if we're going out for RFP, so it's also advertising.
All right, done. So. Okay, that makes sense. And there was an article. Did you have an item of a couple hundred thousand for consultant trans? Is it? I thought it was Letran. Didn't you have some almost 200,000 in Letran consultant? Modeling or Letran plan 163,000.
What page?
That's money that goes to Letran. That's on here. You're talking about Task 1.6, right?
What's the plan? I mean, you got the routes you got. You know, you
That's money that actually pays for their staff.
Okay.
So we use it, we use the 5305 side of it for the consulting side. They actually use it for staff.
Okay.
And it's transit planning that they provide.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Then item number 7.
This one.
How about six? Recommend MPO endorsement of the State Routes to School. State Routes to School.
Hopefully it will come up.
No.
And there were no attachments in the agenda and in the package, were there?
No, it was emailed out after the, because we didn't have them from the school board yet.
Okay.
You're going to have to close something else out because it's doing something else. Yeah, close all that.
Are these the applications the staff prefers? Is that what we're saying?
Well, basically, there are two applications. And one of them is a Tice Elementary, unincorporated Lee County, and the other one is at the City of Cape Coral that benefits Trafalgar Elementary. As part of the MPO process that we have in place for Safe Route to Schools, it is the school district or whoever is the applicant. In this case, it's the school district. They are responsible for prioritizing those projects. So based upon the number of students that actually is benefited by putting these projects per school, the school district prioritized them as 1 and 2.
Okay.
So what we are trying to do as part of this application process, we have to get an endorsement from the MPO board. And then we have to submit that to District 1. They have a special person who is in charge of Safe Route to School programs by March 31st. So what we are asking from you is basically, let me show you this. Hold on 1 sec.
Are these projects already somewhere approved by us in one of our different planning programs or work?
Okay, let me give you a background on this. These projects actually were submitted as part of another part of funding, the TEA funds. And that actually came to this group as part of overall bike path projects.
So we have approved these projects in that manner?
Well, no, we actually looked at those projects and we did approve as part of TEA funding. This is a totally different funding.
Right, but we've looked at the projects.
Yes, you have. You have in the past. So basically what we're trying to do today is to try to get a recommendation of endorsement for the MPO. And hold on, let me show you exactly what those projects are. I missed that, sorry. Okay, so those are the locations for the project. That's the Cape Coral one right here. And that's where the sidewalks are supposed to be. This is Trafalgar, and that's Southwest 28th Avenue. That's in Cape Coral. And then this one, actually a bunch of different places. That's Alameda, I don't know how you say that.
Alameda?
Yes. So that basically benefits Tice Elementary School. So, like I said, the priority 1 and priority 2, the cost estimate for the Tice Elementary is $849,594, which also includes cost for drainage, because one of the issues that we have been facing in the past is because of these old neighborhoods have this old drainage system, and when you go and put sidewalks in there, they have to be again, developed. And so the cost is more there than what we would have actually liked.
Well, there's a lot going on there, too, with canals and water stuff and all kinds. We've been working on this area for years.
It's like the first elementary school in the county. I think we should have the finance.
The city.
Yeah. The county and the state have been working on it for years.
The other thing is that, as Don was telling me, you know, like to say too, the maintaining agency, Lee County BOCC, so the way these applications are turning is the school district who is the applicant. They write the application, and the sponsor is the local government jurisdiction where that particular school is located, because they would be ultimately responsible for maintaining those once they are built. So that's why you have the maintaining agencies at Lee County BOCC and the City of Cape Coral.
And the school board has to provide a whole bunch of background to it of how many kids are going to walk there, and there's a lot of criteria that goes right into it. They're waging against everybody else around the state.
Right. So that's how it is different from our previous process. You know, we only included like TA applications, pre-applications, we call them. That didn't involve that kind of a comprehensive approach. All those surveys and all that kind of stuff.
The $849,000, that's higher than this $428,000 because the difference is drainage?
Yes.
Then there's $528,000, I think. So, yeah. So it's about $320,000 for drainage.
Right. So did you get that from the website?
Yeah, the total from TICE. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's $528,000, and that's $849,000.
That number actually has to be revised.
Right.
That number that you have.
But yes. Is that the difference? Yes. Is the $320,000? Okay.
Yeah.
So just for a little context, these projects in part came out of about 3, maybe 4 years ago now. No, it's probably 3 years
ago. It was
2013. We got a technical assistance grant for the project for public spaces, and their subconsultant in to do a lot of this work. And Billy Hathaway, district secretary, was involved in that, those walking audits around the elementary. And really, this area has just such a high amount of people walking in general and a high amount of students walking. It's really been neglected for a long time. So, I mean, I don't know if we're ready for a motion, but I feel strongly that.
I feel strongly.
So we have one motion who feels strongly and one second who feels strongly.
Yeah. And I want to add to what Margaret said, this number walking in TICE, I've recently been getting from the school system students walking for a number of other elementary schools. This is probably three or four times the number you find typical.
Okay. And the drainage does need to be fixed. It's all in Billy's Creek and all next to Clusahatchee, and it all works together. So the added number actually really works together. So I know you don't like to talk about environmental stuff here, but if I can be the voice of that, the number works.
Why don't you take me to the, go to the slide that shows the TICE map.
Right.
New York Avenue is?
It's right there at that. That
okay.
Corner.
Right.
Yes, the elementary
and
school.
TICE is on the right hand side.
We have another project in there that's already funded. Mm-hmm. And then there is another project
where the blue
which is in the which is going to be funded.
It's underneath.
This is, like I said, this is Safe Route to School projects, and the money that would be available would be anywhere from 2018 to 2020. So it could be in 2018, 2019, or 2020. However, there's another project, TICE Elementary, which we know would be getting the money, and that would be for 2017. It's not there right in the work program yet, but we know it's coming.
Cool.
And then the sidewalk
for
is...
For what additional stuff that we're voting on today?
No, well, today we're just these two.
Okay. So...
Where's the additional stuff?
Yeah.
I think it's over there on Lene, isn't it, on the other side
that's
of the
right.
Elementary school?
You mean the other project?
The other project, yes.
The other project was, I have to go back and look. I can't remember on top of my head.
The yellow that's to the top right-hand side.
Right.
That's going off of 80, and that's the one that has all of the water issues?
It's very complicated. They all have water issues.
Yes.
But yes, 80s
are closer to Lake Creek.
The stuff up by the highway.
We had a...
It's pretty complicated.
We had a project on Richmond. It's funded. And it goes down Queens Drive into there. That project went from 350 to 850,000. We don't have the money to do it.
Because and of all the water.
Yeah, because they start over here, and by the time you get to 80,
yeah,
you have 4-foot pipes.
It's going to be a big, complicated thing. You don't make it
into it.
That's
all
drainage. But we're working on it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I certainly wouldn't want to contradict, you know, and impose myself on or be in any way opposition to a school board proposal. The only really deciding factor for me was whether this, I want to just be sure that this is consistent with and does not conflict with any of the other, with the general planning that we've come up with thus far.
No, we didn't.
If I have that assurance, then I'd like to move the question.
Can I say one thing just also in context about that? This is consistent with the community. The community did a bike pit plan. So this is also consistent with the community's plan.
Well, and it's really,
it's not just the school board. The community separately did a bike pit plan on its own, and that's consistent with that.
I mean, these are coming out of the efforts that were done before, too.
All right, we've had a motion and a second. Strongly in favor of additional discussion on the motion? Hearing none, seeing none, trust you're ready to vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign, motion carries. Now we get to number 7. Overview of CMS and the bike ped projects.
Okay, for some of you, for the new people out here, we normally submit our priorities, the MPO priorities, in June, and then the MPO adopts it. I mean, it goes through these committees. But prior to that, whatever project we select still has to go through this pre-application phase when FDOT will be responsible for evaluating the viability of those projects. So, also, just wanted to call out that we have different pots of funding, and this is the TA, Transportation Alternative TA funds, that comes to the MBO. So normally we get $700,000 for a year, typically. So what happened last year was there were lots and lots of projects, but very less money. We're talking about the $700,000, and then also the cost went up. So we got very few projects funded, and mainly they were design phases. So we did not ask for new applications this time. You know, like we basically went with projects that went unfunded last year. So the old Barnstore Road, the design has been funded for a while. And these red outlines basically means we have taken into consideration updated cost estimates. So that's what it means. And then those priorities are from last year. Now, one of the things that we have been doing is if there's already a phase in the pipeline, it would get a higher priority. So, which means, you know, like when we bring all these projects to you in June and then we recommend priorities, one of the things you'll notice will be these two projects here in Fort Myers, they already have design funded, so they will automatically go up. That Cape Coral project is going to come down. So anyway, all these projects are from last year, and so that's the list that we provided the pre-applications and submitted to FDOT. These are multimodal enhancement box funds. Basically, the amount of money that is there is $5 million. $2.5 million goes to bike path, $1 million goes to congestion management, and then $1.5 million goes to transit. So
this is the bike path list of projects. Again, last year, the design phase was funded for Summerlin. So we are asking only for the construction. And again, you know, like these are new cost estimates because the design has already been funded. So the costs have gone up. So in some of these cases, we have updated the cost estimates. We deleted Trafalgar Elementary because now there's a separate pot of funding. That's the Safe Route to School program that we discussed before. And that's pretty much it. All these projects are from last year, and the way they have been put in this list is based upon the priority order from last year. Okay. Now, the same multi-model enhancement box funds, it is $1 million goes for congestion management projects, basically that affect, you know, that can be used for operational improvements or intersection improvements, turn lanes and all that kind of stuff. This in here, the design has already been funded. So we're looking at the construction phase. If you want, I can go into details of each of these project if you want to know what those improvements are.
Ron, can I assume since 3 and 8 are up there that all the other top 10 have been funded or built or withdrawn, or what can I assume?
Well, remember, that 3 is actually, you know, like go back, if you go back to the previous phase, signal timing, not the signal timing, that, with the signal timing and coordination, what we are asking for is $150,000 pretty much every year.
So saying, what happened to number 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, and 7?
They were funded.
9. They're gone.
They're funded. And so the 3 is there, 6. You might even see 4 and 5 are missing. And that's because, you know, like do some of the projects are funded.
Okay.
Anything on in here that you need clarification? Okay. Then there's this new pot of money. It's called the Sound Trail Funds. It's a statewide program where $25 million is available every year. The first year of funding, they did not commit any funds for projects. So actually now we are talking about $50 million of funding. So it's discretionary dollars, not tied to our MPO programs. Now, they have not officially called out applications, but we know that the applications are going to be coming in April, so you have to work towards that. So, since I talked about project pre-applications, you know, and District 1 has this policy that you have to submit pre-applications for construction viability, that's why we picked these two particular projects and submitted as pre-application. So first one is Kismet Parkway, like it says, that's 6.5 miles. And so design is $335,000, construction $1.376 million. The JYLP Trail Extension PD&E study, we actually submitted that as a PD&E study, but it was changed into a feasibility study. So we are talking about extending JYLP from Colonial to Hanson Street. And then, normally what we try to do when it comes to, these are regional projects, and you tap into regional funding. So we work with our neighbors to the south. In this case, Collier, of course. And because what we try to seek eventually is joint priorities with Collier County, right? So Collier has not considered any proposals. So a joint BPCC PAC meeting, it was agreed that projects be prioritized jointly by both MPOs. On this one, again, April is when you have to submit the applications. April we'll find out more, and when we submit these applications, we might have to come to this committee to get endorsement.
So, two questions. One, what is the projects competitive across the state? And then two, are they supposed to be tourist related? What's the purpose of the Sun Trail
yes to both. These are competitive across the state, but our projects in District 1 has to be first submitted to the Sun Trail coordinator for District 1. And then they would look at those projects, and then they would transmit that into central office.
So how does Kismet Parkway, I'm familiar with the other trail extensions, okay, so I get how that would relate to tourism, but how does the Kismet Parkway?
Okay, let me show you why. So I was going to get into this later. We have, I mean, for projects to qualify, yeah, it has to be part of a regional trail system.
Right.
So in Lee, Collier, and Charlotte, that's it. From this point all the way, this is called the Southwest Coast Connector Trail, and it goes all the way up to Pinellas County. Just southern, I mean, it ties up with the Pinellas Trail. So you cannot put any project which is not within this alignment. All right? So we looked at opportunities and gaps. Some of them has right-of-way problems, meaning, you know, like it is in FPL corridors. We looked at one in Bonita Spring. Unfortunately, you know, like there's still a lot of work to be done. So here it is. It's going like that through JYLP extension, Littleton, then Kismet Parkway, and then ties up with Barnstow Road.
Okay.
We have our candidate projects are very limited at this point of time.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to do some more upfront work.
Yeah. So that's why Kismet Parkway is there, and we call it. It's, if you look at it individually, I'm going to go into details later on after I get out of this agenda item, but. The whole thing is the Southwest Coast Connector Trail, but then you also have those individual trails like JYLP, and Kismet is part of what they call the Cape Henry Alternative Trail. But anyway, let me go back and finish this agenda item. Okay, so anyway, that's an overview right now, and so that's where we stand. And these are the projects, basically Kismet Parkway. That's Kismet Parkway from Del Prado all the way to Barnstow Road. The county had a problem. We discussed about what about Littleton, and they said, you know, like, well, there's utility easement and all that, so we have to work out some of those things, you know, for next year. And that's the JYLP segment that we're talking about. So that's that particular agenda item.
What will the infrastructure be on Kismet?
Kismet is going to be a multi-use trail facility, and it has to be off-road. It's still going to be part of the road right-of-way.
Right.
It's going to be 10 foot wide.
Okay.
Paved, of course, asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? Yeah.
When you have a 10-foot wide multi-use path, do you put a white line down it and you have pedestrians and bikes, or how do you do that?
Well, that will be part of the designing process.
Huh?
That will be part of the design, and when we. But, I mean, but yes, I mean, there are different ways.
I mean, is there a typical rule what people do when they have bikes and pedestrians on the same path? How's it usually handled?
Bikes lane.
Well, you know, like you have examples right here.
Examples, not bad examples.
The good examples, well, generally if it is a 12-foot lane, you know, like you have a lane demarcating, you know, like pedestrians, where pedestrians should be using, and the rest of it is used by bicyclists. So that would be the way to go. But sometimes if it is like less than 12 feet, if it is 10 or 8 feet, then you're better off leaving it alone without any kind of demarcation.
Okay.
And there's rules.
Stupid question. I'm new to this, so bear with me. Is it taking an existing lien or adding another one?
No, this is approved.
Okay. That's what
I mean, it's still in the right of way, road right of way, but it's not with the bin.
Okay. Thank you.
Told something. I mean, if you need a 12-foot path, why don't we just go for a 12-foot path? I mean, why do we have this discussion and people come in here and say, bikes don't exist with thing, and we're putting these 2-foot strips on Corkscrew Road to get people killed? I mean, can somebody just decide what a multi-use path that works is? I mean, if a sidewalk's okay with 5-foot, and the bikes are okay with 6, maybe 11's enough.
The state requires, you know, like you to consider at least 12-foot. But then, because of the constraints, it can go all the way down to 8 feet. But typically, they would want 12 or even wider.
Okay, well, why aren't we asking for a 12? I mean, if 12-foot works.
Well, the thing is, you know, again, like I said, how much of the right-of-way is available? So they looked at the right-of-way, and they felt that 10 feet would be the best possible.
On Kismet?
Yeah.
How about over here?
And that's a BDNE study.
Oh. So, What is it now? It's wider. I think it's 12 feet.
I can't remember.
I don't think it's 12 feet.
JYP, I don't think?
No. There's some concrete pavements out there.
What about John Yarborough Park? There's no limitation on the thing there. Why isn't that 12 foot?
Those are older rails. That's why some of them are 8 feet wide. Or, you know, like it's almost like a sidewalk in some sections.
That's my point.
Yeah.
You say, why is it 12 foot on this? You say we don't have the right of way. So you say, what about John Yarborough? Well, it's wrong. Is the extension going to be wrong too? 5 years from now, we're going to be saying, well, that's the wrong path to build.
No, we'll make it wider. I mean, as far as it goes.
How wide is it?
12 foot. Let's say 12 foot. But this
is that what the application is for, the John Yarborough extension?
That's a PD&E study.
So you don't know what it is. Okay. So maybe it'll be 12
foot. Yeah,
maybe.
Go ahead.
Not less than.
Can I?
Yeah.
To relieve some of the angst, because I think we should get as wide as we can.
Sure.
Paths, is to just simply agree, maybe by consensus now, that we, when there are new opportunities to expand the width, then we do it.
Well, I don't know what the right width is. I'm asking this, but I know that what we're doing now is C minus at best.
Right.
I mean, we got. You know, 2-foot bike lanes on the road with rocks in it, the guys in spandex go for recreation, and recreation is not transportation. And this is an opportunity to have something done right. And if you need a 5-foot sidewalk and then 3-foot separation and then a double traffic bike lane, I don't know what we need, but I know that what we're talking about is not right. And we're building these inadequate facilities.
So it's hard before the PD&E to say what the right thing is, because right is based on context. So
no, I don't think so. I think right is based on what objectively works and is safe. Now maybe you can fit that in the right of way or not.
Well, it's not just
I can't
right.
get an answer to a simple question from the engineers I talked to and from the gentleman at the MPO. What is the ideal bike mixed youth, bike and pedestrian thing? What is it and what is right?
12 is ideal.
Yeah.
And they would prefer 14 feet.
Is that better than dividing? Is that better than a 5-foot sidewalk and an 8-foot with 3-foot between them?
Yeah.
10. I mean, where you actually separate the types of use. Yeah, I still
see. Within the path itself?
Well,
you're not talking about on
you're asking side. A question. It is an answer.
Well, it is. In Europe, they have all over
and
Europe.
And if I go over Europe, I see a lot of different solutions. So but, do I ride on some bicycle path with the multi-use path, and there's a driveway every 50 feet, I'm on a bicycle, and I'm cruising along at 20 miles per hour, I don't want to be stopped at every intersection. I've got 50 kids and tricycles leaving the school. The thing that I will build in a situation like that would be different if it's like alongside the causeway heading out to Sanibel where there's no driveways and nothing that I have.
Like the John Yarborough Park.
And so, you know, it's just not a uniform world to be able to give a uniform answer to.
But
But there's everything I saw in Europe made more sense than everything I've seen here. In Scandinavia. And I don't understand why it's so hard to put a white line down the middle and a picture of a bicycle guy and a picture of a pedestrian or to offset through the middle.
And I've seen places like that in the States.
And Al, I think you'll when the study comes back and shows the right-of-way is available, I think that everyone's cognizant of that these days. And that it will go to 12 feet and it would possibly be divided. But I love hearing what you got to say today. It's great. We need to improve what has been put on the roads that is not safe. It's just not safe.
This idea that we need 2-foot bike lanes on 41 and out Brooks Brew Road, to me, is complete insanity.
Right, and your
why don't you take that part of the right of way and build something that's useful?
Your comment about recreational or athletic
is not transportation
is the core of it.
Recreation is not transportation.
Right.
They're
looking to provide
the group out there in the spandex, that's not transportation. Getting kids to school.
When I'm riding on my bike to work, and I'm 5 minutes late, I'm going as fast as those guys in the spandex. Where I go, I don't need to.
Okay.
A 6-foot shoulder is what you're going to need because you're not going to be colliding with every pedestrian that got a dog on an expandable leash.
No, I don't know. The point is, when you have a 50-mile-an-hour road with bike lanes on, I'm in a car, I'm scared for myself, I'm scared to kill somebody. I would never want anybody I know or like in that bike lane. And to me, it's for a lawyer, it's an attractive nuisance. You're telling a 14-year-old kid that, oh, it's great, you can ride 10 miles up 41, and there's rocks from, the rock trucks and stuff. I mean, I think it's completely insane.
Right,
now,
right.
I don't know whether, if you take those 2-foot lanes up each side, whether you can get 4-footer right away, or that's going to be shoulder anyway. Now, the implication is if I took those 4 feet, then maybe I got 5-foot sidewalks on each side, right? So now, if I take those 4 feet, and I know this is a crazy thing if you're engineers, don't put the road in the center of the right-of-way. Now, I know that's almost an impossible concept, but you could have the road not in the center of the right-of-way. You could have a 5-foot sidewalk on one side, and you got 9 feet now on the other side, and I haven't taken any more right-of-way. Now, to me, the kids can get to school, all the fat tire people, it works. The only guys who've lost out is guys and gals, the spandex crowd, but that's recreation. I mean, they should go to the county commission and petition to build a velodrome if they want recreation. But those guys ride in a dangerous, on the side of the road, which they mostly drive in their cars there and get to Pelican Bay or Coconut Road, and then they have a tour, which is fine, but that's not, I think, something that this committee should hold as a high priority.
And this is something, when we do that, this is what we should really be looking for, these questions when we have the PD&Es.
And I'll bet you that we are in the process of voting to authorize money for a PD&E, and they will not consider half of the things we've just discussed. Because they're going to do the same old, same old. Now, maybe I'm just a negative guy.
This would be different.
Disappoint me, will you?
I don't think I have to disappoint you because you have to find out where the money is coming from. This is determined by Office of Greenways and Trails statewide.
Okay.
So it's not just local government. They are going to be looking at that. There's also going to be FDOT Central Office who will be working with Department of Environmental Protection. Yeah. And within that, they have the Office and Greenways Trails, which have their own, they work under the Parks and Recreation.
Is that supposed to make me feel better or worse?
Better.
Oh, better. Okay.
Of course.
We got smart people on, right?
People, bicycle-friendly people. Let me put it
that way. Well, bicycle-friendly people force a lot of things that I think are absolutely insane.
Well,
so,
and see, Al, that's what you're touching on. If you touch on from the design standard stuff, it's opposite of what you're saying. But I agree. When I go out and do a public meeting, most of the people I talk to want to be on a sidewalk, a pathway, or something else, don't want to be in the road. But most of the design standards are slanted more to towards the road.
And isn't this the place a citizen would discuss that, which is what I'm trying to do?
Well, and when we talk about some of these things like Cape Coral's bike ped plan, they're trying to deal with some of those issues of how do I fit that in with the drainage and everything. Those are a lot of those discussions that will be happening.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention I went to the Bonita Springs presentation of the renovation of Bonita Beach Boulevard, and they did just what you're speaking of. Now, it's an existing right-of-way, existing roadway, so they can't shift it too far. But they're narrowing the lanes, and instead of having a bike lane that's inadequate on both sides, it will be one side only. A wide, separated from the roadway entirely with its own row of shade trees, wide, separated, two-directional, bi-directional bike lane. It's ideal. And that's where it's moving. You said something earlier about this, the bike people ask for a lot of things that are now unsafe. And it's absolutely true, because the spear point of the bike ped, or the bike movement in any case, were very athletic riders. They were middle class, middle-aged white males who rode for recreation. And they were willing to take a lot more risks with their bodies than the rest of the population. But it has grown now. And so now we're looking at that 60% of the population that wants to ride but is too cautious, and it's exactly what you're speaking to. And it's coming. We can push it by asking those questions with every study.
I think one thing that's important to remember, these are not engineering standards. This is U.S. law. This is traffic law that dictates a bicycle is a vehicle. Essentially, it's got the same rules. And I don't necessarily agree with it myself, because 2,000-pound car versus, you know, 200-pound
thing, yeah.
But that's part of the problem, is you've got to follow the law, and that's how traffic laws and things are written. Don't you agree? Not to a certain degree. So it's been ingrained in our society for a very long time. So it's not just a matter of simple thing of going on to this project and saying, we're no longer going to treat a bike as a vehicle because we think it's the right thing to do. It's a little more systematic than that, in my opinion.
Are you saying, well, obviously we don't have any federal roads, so perhaps you're saying that the federal design standards get followed by the state, and you can't do that without violating federal funding? I mean, are you telling me that the state can't say, the state DOT can't say, no, we're not going to follow that, roads above 40 miles an hour will not have bike lanes on the pavement in the road?
The federal
question to the guy sitting next to me.
Yeah, can the state DOT do that? Or is that going to be, oh, you can't get any federal funding?
Well, the federal sets minimums. The states can go beyond minimums.
Well, I don't want if it's a fast road, I don't want bike lanes on the road. I want to have the state DOT say their guidelines. Say he's saying he can't do it because the guidelines are there, but can the state change?
All right, since you're talking about state DOT, and
we have them.
And one can step in whenever he likes. The thing is that right now they have new rules and regulations that is coming in the plans preparation manual. So basically, if the design speed of a roadway is 45 miles per hour, so if there is any kind of reconstruction there or resurfacing, like it is happening in US 41, like Daniels to Gladiolus, they are going to reduce the travel lanes to 11 feet, and they're going to put 7-foot buffered bike lanes. They are also doing the same thing on State Road 78.
Each side, so it's a shoulder and a bike lane.
No, it's just a bike lane. There's no shoulder.
Well,
unless you are talking about maybe a right turn lane where you have to put the traditional keyhole bike lanes, then you'll have the keyhole bike lanes, then you'll have the right turn lane, and then you'll have a little strip like a shoulder, maybe 2 feet wide or something like that. That's about it.
7 feet is attached to the road.
Yes,
that's what
and
you're
it has it's buffered, which is a significant improvement.
What do you mean buffered?
It'll have two or three feet of. Yeah, go ahead.
It's going to have a double stripe line.
Okay.
Buffered in the roadway.
Yeah. So they have a double stripe line, and then 5 feet left, or a 7-foot lane with double stripe line.
11-foot lane, depending on the design speed of the roadway, that will determine the size of buffered bike lane.
I think buffer minimums are 18 inches, but they can be quite.
And then the lane 7 feet, or it's 7 feet minus 18 inches.
It's one of those. 7 feet wide.
It's the tall
one. But there's going to be a line, basically 3 feet wide. So you need 4 feet to navigate, but you need 3 feet separation from the
cross. Okay. So 7 feet includes the stripe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
keep asking those questions. No, I really, seriously, because this is, these design guidelines are in tremendous flux. I mean, they're moving very rapidly, and the speed picked up quite a bit in the last 2 to 3 years, which is why your questions are hard to answer.
Good conversation. But we're going to move now.
All right. Ready?
Yes, sir.
The roundabout update. I mean, I already gave you an update last time. That was the February 4th meeting. We had, that's actually the second steering committee meeting. That's not a third steering committee. The second steering committee meeting was held on February 11th. So it was not March 4th. That's my mistake. Sorry. So pretty much we reviewed operational analysis results that a consultant brought to the advisory committee. And then we discussed geometric concepts for each of these intersections. So basically the next step that we have a March 19th MPO board presentation. Basically they are going to give an overview of the study, progress update, ongoing activities, and they're also going to share like 4 geometric concepts. And I'm going to share those to you as well. The third steering committee meeting is scheduled for March 29th, and that's where the consultant is actually going to be ranking all the different designs. And from there, you know, the steering committee is going to make a recommendation that 2 should move forward for 30% design and then maybe submit it to FDOT for project development. MPO board presentation, April 22nd, sorry, that, again, my mistake, 20, it should be 22nd, not 20, whatever, 20. Review roundabout conceptual designs and rankings, and basically whatever steering committee recommendations come from. And we discussed this at the TAC meeting today in the morning, that maybe the TAC and the CAC should also have a say in what should be the 2 projects that needs to move forward. But eventually, I just wanted to caution you, just like I cautioned the TAC, this was an MPO board-driven process. So there are some council members, MPO commissioners that have their own projects and all that. So even if you say, no, we like this project, they probably would just go by those recommendations. So anyway, with that caution, I will move into the next slide. And I also want to say that the 4 geometric concepts that I'm going to show you are the simple ones that requires only a single lane roundabout. The more complicated roundabout, the more crazy ones, would be coming next month. All right? So these are the ones, you know, that one, of course, Ortiz and Thais, your community. Yeah. So.
Ortiz and Luckett?
No,
Thais.
Oh, that's Ortiz and Thais. Oh, okay.
So this one doesn't have really too much of impact, otherwise.
Right.
Pretty simple. And like I said, you know, these are single lane roundabouts. The next one is Michigan Avenue Link, and this is State Road 82 out here, and then Mars Avenue. That's a pretty bad intersection. And the consultant is also going to be looking at the sight lines at this angle out there, the Michigan Avenue and Michigan Avenue Link. That's a bad spot also. So there's no right-of-way impact, really, because these are public properties. And there might be a little bit of issue out there, but that's pretty much it. The next one is Fort Myers, Carroll Road and Broadway. A little bit of impact is going to be on the drainage side, right here in the canal. Otherwise, it's within the right-of-way lines. The one thing that I wanted to mention to you, that's a mini roundabout. And I'll go to the next previous one. Look at the circle in the middle and the apron. and then you go to this one.
Small.
Yeah, so basically a red portion, which is the apron, is only probably 3 inches high. So trucks or fire trucks can just drive over it and just go. That's the more modern roundabouts. That's Virginia and McGregor. And last time when I was reporting on this particular location, I did mention that one of the issues that will be faced when you put a roundabout in there are southbound traffic, you know, which is backed up by the light across the addition house is here, and they have a pedestrian signal. So whenever that pedestrian signal is on, the cars back up, and there's bad backups, and they might go and affect the roundabout. So one of the proposals that the consultant is saying is that maybe the collection point for people gathering should be wider, and it should be almost like a much wider crosswalk so that more people can cross the roadway.
Make it shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. And the next, any questions on the roundabout side?
Well, the narrow, this, I'm sorry, were you pointing to me?
Go ahead, whoever.
Go back to the small one.
The mini?
Yeah, and where that, that's Carroll and?
Broadway.
Okay. We have some mini roundabouts which are really annoying.
Like Hill.
Okay, no, this is,
this is not, this is, I mean, you're going to, it's going to stick to the modern roundabouts,
yes,
geometries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there going to be one at the plantation in Crystal? I keep hearing.
The county is doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's in the process.
That one's already programmed.
That's already funded. And anyway, any other questions before I move on to the next? Okay, the Cape Coral Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan. So the city of Cape Coral is taking the lead. Bruce Di Zambrano is the project manager on this one. So we have pedestrian advisory, the project advisory committee kickoff meeting on February 24. The consultant gave a project overview, and the needs and priorities were discussed. February 25th and 26th, the consultant did all the field work, and then they reported back to staff, and there were discussion of issues and all that. Then the bike path interactive map, which has gone live for public comments. This is actually a wiki map. It's a little tricky. Let me show you.
It doesn't like it when you go out to that.
While you're waiting for that, let me ask, who's on the roundabout evaluation committee?
The roundabout steering committee has a member from FDOT, member from the county traffic, Steve Jensen.
Yeah, Steve. And
MPO staff. And then city of Fort Myers, we have a couple of representatives of the public works director.
The question I have while you're waiting for that is, the study was a feasibility study. What you just showed us, does that mean that in their estimation, those were all feasible? Is that what those are that you showed us?
Okay. No, those are not the only ones. We have a whole lot of them. You have not seen the real ones that you'll be craving for, you'll get excited. These are not the exciting ones. Well,
she's,
I know
that's excited about Tyson.
You like that because he's in the ties, but we have some remarkable, roundabout, for example, US 41 below the overpass and all that, and then Colonial and MacGregor.
But is that what that is that what they're doing with what you showed us, that these are feasible?
Well, all of them are feasible.
All of them are feasible.
But with little or more impacts, but they're still doable.
Okay.
Now, when the evaluation will come, they will look at safety, reduction of crashes, and the benefit-cost ratio.
Okay.
So they'll be looking at all of those, and also something like we discussed on the US 41 MacGregor intersection. Well, you all know that the southbound is at grade. There's no span out there, right? So the way it has been designed right now is taking into consideration of what is existing. Basically, it's the northbound overpass, not a southbound. And people have to come down to go southbound across Victoria and all that, Victoria Street. So the way you have designed it right now is taking a lot of right-of-ways at the northwest corner. So we don't know what's in the stake in the future as far as a southbound span is concerned or replacement of the bridge. Now, if we go and construct a modern roundabout there, which is going to be very expensive, is going to work well. But when that overpass comes, the west, the southbound span is built, then you would have over-designed that roundabout.
The other thing is some of them don't make sense right now. For instance, the ones on the one-way pairs, well, if they turn them back to two-way streets, it doesn't make sense to do it as the one-way pair versus if you're, you know, for the two-way.
So the feasibility study was really more a context and looking at what's possible and then all of the other considerations.
Well, the way we started was 18 locations, maybe we'll whittle it down to a few.
Right.
And we had the screening analysis process. But what we found out was, well, you know, like, you can apply two or three different criteria to say, oh, it doesn't work, but that, you could always rectify that, because it depends upon operation analysis, it depends upon, maybe you can shift the roundabout a little bit here and there, and then you can get away from all those right-of-way constraints. And that's exactly what is happening. So, April, when you get your presentation, you'd be seeing everything.
All the concepts.
And there's how many?
There are 18 plus. Some locations has got like three alternatives, two alternatives.
Were those all one lane?
Yes, single lane.
They're all same as I thought.
So okay.
Those are the simpler ones.
So this is the wiki map that I'm talking about. So basically anybody from the public can go in there into this. It is live now, and so you can put your comments in there. If you have any issues, you can go and identify the spot and write your issues, or you can even recommend some routes, desired bike routes, desired walking routes. So I'm here. Basically, it will show you exactly where you were when you put in your comments. Okay, let me go back to the main presentation here. Okay, so next steps are like the public kickoff meeting is in April 20th, and then there's going to be an open house in late summer, and then the final plan presentation is going to be in early fall. And these were some of the stakeholder comments and design concepts that were discussed when the consultant was here for 3 days. That the first one is, of course, the westbound span of the Cape Coral Bridge. The county is talking about replacing that. So there's talk about including a bike trail similar to the Courtney Campbell Causeway. If you're familiar with that causeway, you have a two-way bike trail on the south side of the bridge. And, you know, like landscape and benches and all that kind of stuff. So, and also with the city of Cape Coral, they don't have a dedicated source of funding for bike path projects. County has impact fees and they use some of the money for bike path. So basically identify a regular source of local funds for bike path projects. Otherwise, you know, like the city kind of depends upon MPO dollars to do their projects. Then also some of those navigable canals, you know, where you cannot put a bridge structure in there because it is navigable and all that kind of stuff. So there was discussion about manually activating non-permanent structures that would bridge the navigable canals and then manually operate it, and the bicyclists can cross and then it'll roll back. North Cape is not bike path friendly. We all know that. So crossing Pine Island Burns to intersection is stressful. And the remaining is pretty much applicable anywhere in the nation, in the state, in the county. When you design any bike path facilities, keep in mind that you were designing for a 10-year-old, and then you solve all your issues. And then they implement buffered bike lanes. We talked about 7 feet buffered lanes, 6 feet. It could be, depending upon right-of-way constraints, it could be 6 feet, or it can be 5 feet conventional, or it can be 4 feet conventional buffered bike lanes. Some green-painted bike lanes, that was brought up about Cape Coral Parkway going west, where there's more residential community out there. Design road as complete streets, improve bike path accessibility to bus stops. So that's it. And I don't know whether you remember when we were talking about Sun Trail funds, I said I can go into details later about something else, a new development. And I want to go back and talk about the funding selection for the Sun Trail program. I told you $25 million is available per year. The way the money is going to be allocated is they've already defined and they've already targeted this coast-to-coast connector that connects from the East Coast to West Coast across Central Florida. And that's where the money should go. Most of the money should go. And the legislature asked the Florida Greenways and Trail Council to identify a second priority regional trail system. All right? So that could be your Southwest Coast Connector, Northeast Coast Connector, River of Grass, and all that. And then you have the individual trails, and those would be, let me go here. So this is what they call the Sun Trail Network. Any gaps in this network where you see the green and orange lines are eligible for Sun Trail funds. So this is the Southwest Coast Connector. So from Pinellas County all the way to Marco Island out here. Now, when I go back, so I said other regional trail system, so the Southwest Coast Connector could be one. Now, you have an organization called the TBARTA, which is Tampa Bay Area Regional Transportation Authority. So it is made up of six member counties. And they actually reached out to Lee, Collier, and Charlotte for a broader alliance so that they can push the Southwest Coast Connector as the number two regional trail system. So that's what we're trying to do, and the decision is going to be made on March 31st by the Florida Greenways and Trail Council. So at our end, we're trying to do everything possible, like getting letters of support and all that. And this is the letter that was actually submitted by TBARTA, and it has the logos from all the member MPOs and the Lee, Collier, and Charlotte. And it's got the signatures from all the executive directors of the MPOs. So it's basically talking about the push for Southwest Coast Connector as the second highest priority regional trail system.
And what's the date again on that decision?
March 31st.
March 31st, okay.
So what we are trying to do, we are trying to get Bike Walkley involved. Bike Walkley actually wrote a beautiful letter supporting the trail, and it has been submitted. And we are also reaching out to Conservancy of Southwest Florida, Visitor Convention Bureau, and it's not just us in Lee County, but anywhere along that trail, going all the way to Pinellas County.
And if you want to come up with a good branding name, we were kicking some names around, but we're open to suggestions. I think the ones we were using at the end of the thing was Gulf Coast Trail, whatever. But
so going back to this slide, what are the funding implications? As it is, right now, the way we stand, we are eligible for individual trails. If Southwest Coast Connector is not the number two priority regional trail system, we can still qualify for individual trails. The good news is, FDOT Central Office announced, well, no, we're not going to spend most of the money on coast-to-coast connector. There will be three pots of funding. One-third will go to coast-to-coast connector, one-third will go to other regional trail system, and one-third is going to go to individual trails. So think about this. If Southwest Coast Connector is one of the regional trail systems, we qualify for that one, we qualify for this one, FDOT would be hard-pressed not to fund any of our projects.
You should bring in the Tamiami name.
That was discussed. Yeah.
Bring that back in. It's got history.
Well, the thing is, the Pinellas didn't like it because it actually starts in Pinellas and goes through Hillsborough. But then the other thing is, they were talking about how it was too closely tied to US 41 and not really, you know, are people going to think of US 41?
Any questions of Ron?
Somebody mentioned about the Gulf Coast Trail.
It doesn't go to Louisiana, so it's not the Gulf Coast Trail.
When we were doing one of the keys, we came up with the overseas heritage.
Agenda item number 9, public comments, not on the agenda. This is where I'm going to ask, David brings charts. And if you had time to look at David's new chart, there's not a road on it.
Wow.
So I'm really kind of concerned that David's losing it. With that introduction, David.
I don't want to take a lot of time, but if you're interested in what's happening with the Coosahatchee and the discharges, this is what this is all about. And the governor, as you know, has declared a state of emergency. His answer is to fix the dike. Well, in my opinion, and I'm not alone in that, the dike needs to be fixed, but the real answer is to buy the land, Sugar Land, south of the lake, and actually build the EAA reservoir, deep water reservoir, that's been on the books for ages. And then you would have a holding tank while you treated it to get it to go to the Everglades, and we would not have these, it's now getting to be twice a year, horrible situations. Both sides of the state are just in a state of disaster.
They own the land for more than a decade. They just never go.
No, they don't. They never bought
the
land.
What about the hundreds of thousands of acres they own?
Well, this is the land is currently owned by a mixture of Dixie Crystals, better known as supporters of Rubio, and U.S. Sugar, and they had originally agreed for 150,000 acres, and that agreement ran out, and the one that expired last October was for 50,000 acres. It was really a lousy agreement because the 20 years they could replant sugar on it. It was not if you could sell your house and live in it for 20 years, you don't need to worry about reverse mortgages. Anyhow, that was why, basically, as I understand it, the governor didn't sign it. And so now it's a new field, but the reservoir has always been on the books, and the people say, well, that's no longer in the plan. Well, they didn't have a public hearing to remove it from the plan. Maybe the people at the sugar industry didn't want it. But they got hurt this year. They lost about half of their crop with the flooding that was taking place. So, you know, it's everybody's in the same boat. And if we don't fix it, we have a lot of tourists that are saying, sayonara. I've just finished my last visit to Fort Myers. And we've had people say, well, we didn't have a deposit, so now we're not coming. And so we can put our heads in the sand like kangaroos, but ostriches. And I tell you, I'm getting old. That's why I'm quitting. But anyhow, if you want to look at it, it's there.
When they say that about they're trying to keep it at 12 feet, right, from the leases?
15 and a half is what they try to hold it to. At the moment, it's just barely under 16. They are, we have a lot of support from Kirk Fawson and Senator Nelson. They personally have disagreed on not buying the land, but Nelson says, you should buy it with Amendment 1 funds. That's what the money is for. And Fawson said, if they won't buy it, I'm going to put in a bill, see if we can get it through Congress for the feds to buy it. But the land needs to be bought. And we have a group now called Captains for Clean Water. And there's a group that I've been loosely associated with, which is the Southwest Florida Clean Water Association. And John Heim is better known for standing on bridges with placards on that. He's a megaphone kind of guy, a little more technical. We just really need to get together. I'll be meeting on the 15th with the Lee County Board of Commission. I did it last Tuesday also. I don't know if we're getting anywhere, but it's just time that this thing got solved.
Interesting question.
I saw it. But feel free to look at it before you leave.
Lee Tran report. I think that's the document that was provided to you just a moment ago. Hot off the press.
That's right. So, as you can see, numbers for passenger trips are down. Year to date, October to January, almost 15% there. We attribute that largely to the low gas prices. You can see the system changes. Back in January, we did switch from our Route 400 to the Routes 410 and 490 for beach service. That's pretty much that's what I have this month.
Has your losses from lower ridership been more or less economically than your savings on fuel?
I don't have the answer to that question now, but that's something I could look up.
I would really like to encourage Lee Tran to think about some other creative ways to address this issue, because I know Collier, for example, has had increased ridership, and it's because they've worked with businesses to provide some kind of incentive, and they've had some success with that. So I just really would encourage Lee Tran, and I know that, you know, there's political constraints, but these lower ridership numbers are really, really low. I mean, even nationally, they're not dropping as much. So, I mean, I looked up the national figures today before I came, and nationally, ridership is dropping about 1% of buses. I mean, it's really not this bad, so I'm really concerned about this number. And there's, again, I realize Lee Tran has constraints, but I think it's something that's...
Well, I don't want to speak necessarily for Lee Tran, but Collier's actually down, too, is what I hear. Sarasota's down.
Yes,
Sarasota. And I was actually asking the East Coast, because I tried to do a comparison, and they were saying they weren't affected the same way.
Well,
so.
I realize nationally it is down some. My understanding is that Collier's started to increase because of the creative programs.
You're thinking between October, since October, perhaps?
I would have to check facts on that, but that's my understanding, is that they are increasing because of the programs that they...
What are their programs?
They have a business program. Maybe you know more about it.
I know. I don't know too much about it. Could you explain?
They have, my understanding, of course it's they, is that they've got a business where they went and worked with businesses to offer ridership incentives for people to ride the bus to the businesses. So.
Do they do any rerouting or just try to sell monthly passes through the business?
You're asking me, I'm going to have to lie. I don't know the answer. I just, and it was recently noted in the paper about some of the things. It was about a month ago in the paper. That's why I'm so vague on it.
Could we get more information on it for next month?
Sure.
And I, after the last month's meeting, I think you were down 15%, and I looked at some of the national numbers, and you know the most that I had been seeing in what had been previously very robust systems were 6%. This is way, way more than that, and they have the same gas prices that we do. So I agree with Margaret wholeheartedly that there's more to this than just gas prices. And whenever you have a problem, there can be creative solutions to it. And we have roads that are choking with traffic. If we do not get serious about transit, as Ty, you have said many times, I don't hear exact words, but we're overseeing, you know, a long-term declining system. Transit has to be a viable part of it, and I think it's within the purview of this body to advance that to the MTO board.
So I look at transit, and I don't know where it's written that they always have to get the loser routes. There's transit that makes money, and there's transit that loses money, and we think the public sector, which we want to run like a business, always has to run the loser routes, and we'll let the businesses run the winner routes. In Key West, they have what's called a comp tour train. It's a transit vehicle. It costs you like $35 to ride that thing, and the bus could do the same route for $1.50. But they don't let the bus charge $5, whereas in Providence, Rhode Island, they have a transit route that includes a visit to all the mansions and stuff. That was in Newport, Rhode Island. We've got taxi fares from Sanibel that are $55 one way. But there's no way our transit authority can get into that because they'll be competing with business. Well, if we want to give transit the loser routes, then we're going to have to come up with ways to make up for not letting them have the money-making routes. And I like your idea, Al, of where, you know, maybe we make the fares really low. You know, and we get the goal of Letran really, you know, they got to balance the books. But the real goal is that we have the ridership. That's what we need to be shooting for. And as long as we're committed to loser routes, then we're going to have to get the money from somewhere else to make up for giving them the loser routes, or else we should be letting them have a piece of the action of the profitable.
Unfortunately, our Port Authority member left, but you'll remember from the survey, that was one of the number one, I think it was the number one requested route, was to the airport and back.
Anywhere.
And you could, you would take, I think it was 750,000 auto rentals out of the airport last year, dumped
and
on
that,
our roadways.
That lack of transit, they come in a big transit vehicle called an airplane. They get in Germany,
right.
They ride their bikes, or they take a transit vehicle
right.
to the airport. They get on a people mover to get in the airport. They take a transit vehicle to get here, and then they rent cars that become part of the problem.
Right. 750,000 cars. So if we can, I mean, you could market the heck out of that and make it a very desirable high-end service.
Unless the Naples Daily News is lying. So I just looked up the article, and the article talks about how Collier's ridership is increasing, and that the program that they started was a business program where the county is offering a 10 to 15% discount on monthly bus passes for employees of companies with more than 300. 500 employees. So they're doing things that are increasing ridership. Unless Naples has got some of the info wrong, which is possible, I guess. But I'm just saying, I just don't think we should have
I think you have to have a good... People make their transportation choices, I think, many years in advance. When I buy a car now, I'm making my transportation choice that I'm going to drive it for the next 5 years. And I don't care what you do with the transit. If it's free, I got a nice new car, I'm going to be driving my car. So what you have to do is you have to have affect that choice when people are driving cars. Now, I'm not talking about getting rid of all cars and everything, but I think families that have two or three and sometimes four cars in a family have their kids' college education going in a gas tank. And what I think is so critical is regular, frequent, secure, safe, dependable transit service for a sustained period of time so that the person that's contemplating buying a car for their 16-year-old kid in order to get around to school and practice and whatever has to have confidence that for the last 4 or 5 years that it's going to work and it's going to be secure and their kid is going to be accosted and miss out on practice and miss out on this. So it takes that long schedule of security, and what we often do is we fund pilot programs for 3 years, and during that time we say, oh, ridership didn't change. Well, you haven't really given it enough time. If you want a pilotship program to work, you have to really have it go more like a 9-year basis, where for the first 3 years people are just gaining confidence that the system will be there. And then you start affecting the capital investment choices that are made in the intervening years. And that's when you get your ridership to really come in. And so that's where we have to focus on dependable, secure, sustained routes that people can count on.
Yeah.
3 points. First, I think that's a great idea, those props thing. Obviously, there's franchise issues, which is why there's no buses to the airport. Now, I don't know where you take them, but with Uber all over the world now, you could have a bus come somewhere central Naples. You don't have to go everywhere because they can get a $7 or $8 Uber ride once they're in Naples or in Fort Myers. So there's going to be a synergy between point to point. The problem with public transportation is that it's typically point to point, and people don't always want to go from their point. But if you had a cheap ride on that rather than, like you say, a $50, $60 taxi ride. So I think that's something in the future. The second thing is, transportation is not a business. It's a nonprofit model or a charitable model. Nonprofit model probably makes more sense to most people. You have 1/7 fare recovery. So the public is paying 6/7 of every ride anybody takes. And maybe I'm looking at this from the other end of the telescope, but to me, when gas is down and the economy's better and people don't need a nonprofit service, that's good news for the economy. So I am happy that ridership is down because that means people are not in need as much, which doesn't mean I don't think the transit is a good idea and I don't support it.
I just read about there's a new company, I forget the name, that provides the last, first and last mile service.
Yeah.
The lack of that you were referring
but
to.
But that fits in with transit. I mean, yes, transit, perfect. There's going to be a synergy. Yeah. I mean, when you get Uber cars that are driverless cars, the driver is half the cost of the drive.
Right.
You're talking about, I mean, my daughter in Boston bought a house in a different area than she was ever willing to look before, because it's not on the fixed transit route. She lived in Cambridge. Now she lives farther down on the Olmsted Park in Boston, because for $10 she can get anywhere on Uber. And, you know, the synergy between efficient transportation for short routes that go anywhere you want, then for longer things, you need a transit line. I mean, like you say, those decisions are made over a many-year period in housing choices. You know, when I lived in the Bronx, the rents, you know, one block from the stop, the rent was this, three blocks from the stop, it was cheaper. I mean, all those factors work together. And I think there's going to be a chance for transit to be helped by these driverless and Uber-type things, because they're going to make transportation very cheap and very democratic in the best sense, that you don't need a license, you don't need a lot of money.
The trouble with Uber is it's still a single vehicle on the road, and our capacities of the roads are kind of limited.
Well, a single vehicle, but if you had a driverless Uber, they've solved the computer connection thing. They've solved the software issue. You can have people who are commuting to work, and the van, the Uber-driven or the driverless van, can have a route from 7 to 7:30, go pick up these people, then they can go to the area where there's lunch trays. I mean, there's tremendous ways for that to get better.
That's exactly the service I'd read about. They're small vans, really, really nice, like airport shuttle type things. And they pick up in a catchment area and then go to transit. And so the articles about how the direction of new investment in transit in this area, they're thinking would be to make the transit stops with more amenities. Nice places where 20 people would disgorge from several little vans.
So can I interject here for a second?
Many
to
hubs.
Clarify that I'm not interested personally in like choking success out of a system that is designed, that by its design right now isn't really going to work given our conditions of sprawl. What I'm saying is we need to take transit seriously and all of the options on the table, whether it's Uber or whether it's the driverless vans, or we need to, because the conditions now aren't working.
Right.
It's clear that what we're doing isn't working. And the fact that Collier is finding ways to be successful, even in the face of conditions of sprawl, says to me that we need to do something here in Lake County that is a little bit more, or a lot more, creative, and start looking towards the future, how we can sort of solve some of these issues.
I concur, because we keep thinking in the same box. We don't live in Chicago. We don't live in a city where it's, I'm going to walk or ride my bike or do those things. And so the demographics, the geography that we deal with has to be a new line of thinking. And we keep thinking the same way and keep doing the same things and think it's going to change. And it's not.
We move to EFTA.
I don't have a report.
Announcements. I know you all came to see if I still had a job.
Oh, yeah. I would like to
after
know
what you
what
sent
happened.
Me to at the LDO meeting.
Yes.
I got hate mail from each of the five county commissioners. I received threats from two cities, and Mr. Pendergrass told me that he was going to replace. Now keep in mind, many of you might know who appointed you. I know Bill was appointed by Pendergrass. So Pendergrass tells me that he's going to fire everybody that he's appointed because they don't hold the same political view on impact fees as he does. And so my first thought was, gee, we just elected Bill as vice chair. And he doesn't know he's going to be fired. So I was glad to see him today. And my commissioner, he said he didn't know I had three of them. It's a guy joke. And we do welcome Pendergrass's new appointee, and we know what your political position is.
I don't think he interviews that well.
You don't think he interviews that well? So, Don sent me a sympathy card, and I appreciate it, Don.
Well, the funny thing is I gave him a four-line thing about
what happened at the meeting, and then I figured you were going to speak later on. You went through his whole spiel and then put the four lines at the end. I go, I just gave him four lines.
Yeah, and it was kind of nice that Commissioner Hammond only asked me twice if I was done yet, which I thought was very considerate, considering he was talking about. I really have determined what the real problem is with those guys. It is ultimately positive that the cities and the counties just don't get along. And I watched all of those poor city councilmen and mayors, and there's more of them than there are county commissioners. But they seem to live in this thing that the county commissioners have this big stick, and I think they were insulted when I told them that our board has no standing, you know, because we're by law, all we have is the ability to recommend. Then I told them they had no standing. Because, you see, by law, all they can do is recommend to the state and recommend to the federal government what they can do. They got no money to spend. They got to go back to their jurisdictions to find out if they can do what they said they can do. So I'm not sure who has any standing in this room. That probably brought on cheers from those in the audience. So that's my comment on that. And don't send me back again, because they will fire me.
You wish.
Well, Rick, yeah. I heard that you did a fantastic job representing the committee, so I want to thank you.
I'm sorry.
For putting yourself in the line of fire.
Yes.
Is that on video, or have we got it on YouTube?
Yeah,
we
have a video.
They probably have it on tape.
Some tape you can listen to.
Yeah, so they probably have it on tape.
I thank you for doing that.
You're more than welcome. And I'll take that shot once a year. But the good news is, and for you new members, and he was already left, so we should assign him the first pass. I like to have each member of our committee make our report at the MPO one time, because it would make Cecil so proud to see his person come there and represent this august body. And the good news is, you don't have to really get the flavor of a whole report, because Don will give you the highlights of
is
what
that
to
true?
Say.
Because I've never volunteered before, because,
well, because
I
most
wanted some talking points, because what I might say might not be what you want me to say.
Well, most times I put together, okay, this is what was approved and what was discussed. And,
oh, that's good.
And just in case
okay,
nobody
I
shows
I
up,
totally do
I read
whatever
it.
You like. I can, yeah. Yes. It's a
and, 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 and sometimes, I think Heather was my favorite send to the MPO. because she would pick up on the conversations that we would have here, and if we really got into Uber, she would let them know we really got into Uber.
Yeah.
And what are they doing about solving transportation issues? But I'll take volunteers first, and if there are no volunteers, did I volunteer?
I don't know if
yes,
I can.
Yes, I thought she definitely
well, I'm not
volunteer.
Sure.
That's
I can. I'm actually.
I don't
know.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I am.
She's scrambling in her book.
No,
this is serious.
I'm willing to, but I'm not sure I can be here this month. When is the meeting?
2 weeks from
it's the 18th.
Friday.
No,
the 18th?
Yeah.
California. Say hi to my sister.
I will.
Another volunteer?
I'm on vacation.
You're on vacation.
I can in April.
Anne is always there.
Okay.
She can.
We put Carrie Call. put her down for April.
Jeez.
And did I, who did you say was going to be there?
No, I said, you know, in case she's not there, well, Anne is always there at the meetings, you know, MPO board meetings.
You could do this month.
If you send me something, I'd rather have a more exciting
meeting. Is
party,
at the same time here at Cape Coral City Hall. They're actually there going 9 o'clock in the morning at Cape Coral.
And he's more diplomatic.
What do they call that? The chambers?
Yeah, council chambers.
Okay. Council chambers.
So if I'm going to give this report, let me ask a question here. Since the big kerfluffle was about impact fees and us having the audacity to recommend a reinstatement of those, to me, the issue is funding. We need another form of funding. I don't care if it's impact fees or whatever it is. I prefer mobility fee. Can I report that this committee agrees as a whole that we need to get very serious about alternative funding sources, as the county commission promised us 3-4 years ago that they were going to do. They were going to come up with a plan for alternative funding.
Well, that will certainly light up the mayors of the cities.
And we want it. And my vote is that they at least thoroughly research the newer and now operational mobility fee systems in the state. There's a number of them now. We're out of a recession, and these systems are moving along, and they're making some money.
These are integral systems. We're not just talking about cars and bikes. We're talking about...
Yes. They even have language where they can fund transit operations should they choose to.
Here's my thoughts on that report. As long as we report those items that we took formal action on, okay, which is the things that Don handed
will give me a list of.
Here's the points.
Yes.
Okay. The things that we talk about that are non-agenda items or that are for discussion items.
Right.
That's fair game.
Okay.
And I think for them to hear sometimes where we get emotional about issues or strongly opinionated about issues are things that we can share.
Okay, and I will definitely share that we feel that our transit system needs to be supported in a more robust way in terms of some creative solutioning in light of these dramatic decreases.
I told them it was an insult to us when we sent them a recommendation and they took no action on it. It's not an insult to us if we send you a recommendation and you vote no.
Vote us down.
So, well, we understand it.
That's
big boys and girls.
Ignore you.
We can have voting.
But be ignored was kind of a slap in the face to the people you appointed.
Yeah.
Now,
it's a slap
Cecil,
in the face to a Democratic system.
Cecil took exception to that. Okay. And that's, I said, just, I felt bad because we're friends. Cecil and I are friends. And, but that's how it is. I mean, they always haven't followed what we have recommended.
Right, right.
And FDOT has not always followed what they have recommended. And I know if I would have searched back in history, I could have found examples of each of those efforts.
Right. You say yes or no.
Yeah, but I think that it's your opportunity to go there. I think it's important for your appointee to see that you... are there in front of them and making a report and speaking on behalf of the whole committee.
Okay, so I'll do March.
I'll try to do April.
Carrie's got
April.
I'll
try.
I'm going to be gone.
May is gone. Sorry. Okay, we'll get ahead.
We can switch. I might be back in May. We make a switch if I'm going to be gone.
So you haven't been there.
Yeah, we're kind of gone.
Maybe we should do it.
Okay, any other items of business for next meeting? We're going to put... You wanted something
that we
train on next meeting?
Yeah, follow up on CAT.
Okay.
It was one, and then we'll have the roundabout stuff too.
Any other items? There being no further business, thank you all for the biggest attendee meeting we have had.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure they were all here to see you. All right.